Welcome to the Art Grind Podcast. This is a podcast run by artists for artists where we talk about what it means to be one. I'm Tun Myine, the producer, with our hosts Dina Brodsky and Marshall Jones. This is being recorded between our many jobs and side hustles. We bring you in-depth investigations into the lives of artists we admire and the stories behind the creative journey. So stay on the grind while we fill your mind.
Hello, Art Grind listeners. I'm here with Dina Brodsky. Today, we interviewed Daniela Estoni. She was excellent. What a delight. And I don't know about you, what you think, Dina, but I feel like she articulated my thoughts on art education that I've been circling around for years. I feel like she was perfect in that.
So when I met her, I was like, you know, I got to get her on the podcast so that her and Marshall could agree on everything.
which ended up happening. Yeah. I feel like I mean, she was just very clear on the beauty of certain education and the limitations and how ultimately it comes from inside you, and her wonderful Italian kind of wording of these things didn't hurt either. Everything sounded much more poetic than my clumsy way of doing it.
She is kind of this, you know, a wonderful painter, but also kind of this incredibly passionate, brilliant person. So just enjoy listening.
And her paintings are beautiful too. Wow. I mean, she's one of those that I was looking at throughout the week and was like, wow, these are really, really cool. Like, there's substance behind them. They're well done. Like, all the things that I like to see. And she definitely kind of tells you about the path that brought her to such work, even though she can't put it in her own words, like she said.
You know, I feel that she's a searcher. And I think that's sort of what makes both her and the paintings really appealing. Like she's sort of like, she's feeling her way like to the next step forward.
All right, guys, see you later. Thanks. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Art Grind Podcast. I'm Marshall Jones here with Dina Brodsky. And today we have a very special guest, Daniela Estoni. She is a extremely accomplished figure painter and teacher. Daniela, welcome to the show. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too. Thank you, guys, for inviting me.
So where are you? You're in Italy, right?
Yes, I'm in Italy. I'm in the countryside nearby Florence. So at the moment it's evening. It's quite dark. I am in my studio. Yeah.
Nice. So what does your days consist of? Are you mostly in the studio?
At the moment, no. For the moment, like, I've been kind of studying in this school called Bisonte. Is a print art printmaker school in Florence, and I'm doing a trimester. I decided that this is a gift that I give to myself for the beginning of this new year, and I'm actually learning how to etch, and and the rest of the day, I'm here in studio painting. But since I have to correct you, because I've quit teaching. So I'm not teaching anymore at the Florence Academy of Art.
So Daniela is an accomplished figure painter and a former instructor. I've heard very good things from when you were there. But before we get to your life right now, let's talk about what made you who you are. Were you one of these kids who was always painting, or kind of how did you get started on this crazy art thing?
Okay, let's say that I was very poor in every other things that they were proposing me. So I was just pretty good at drawing. That's it. That it was the only thing that I was pretty good at doing, and everything else I was actually very bad. Like, school, it wasn't for me. I tried to escape school many times, but
so at what age did you start trying to escape school?
I think a 6 year just the first year I say, this is not for me. I tried to escape. No, but the truth, it was that the system, like for such a very, like I was living in my own world all the time. My mom used to be angry at me because I was constantly in my own fantastic world, in my metaverso. I don't know if you guys say that. Right? Is that the correct metaverse? Metaverse?
Yeah, we're starting to say it now because of Facebook. So we're getting more used to it.
I used to be on the clouds.
Yeah. We generally, because of Facebook, we don't use metaverse as a good thing. But I think to you, when you say it, it means something completely different. You just mean alternative world that is happening in your head.
Exactly. That's exactly it. So like school, it was trying to make me too rational right away, and I was refusing it. And then afterwards, I really instead enjoyed the school. But at the beginning, it was a shock for me. So like that is how it went.
What was it like in the Italian school system? I recently read a book, a great series of books, actually, My Brilliant Friend. Do you know those? From Elena Ferrante. Do you know those, Dina?
You like those?
Yeah, those are good. And it's all about like a young girl growing up in Italy and the school system and stuff. And it's like, so that's my only vision in my head. So tell me what it was actually like.
You know, to say maybe probably the most controversial thing I've ever said on this podcast, I'm like the only person in the world who kind of hated those. You know, like I made it through a few chapters of the first one. And it to me, everyone loved these books, right? And to me, they rang very, it was like a tone deaf writer or that's like the pitch was off.
Very good.
Anyway, like there is another, I don't know if like there is another book called Cuore, that it was a very famous book, and it was always talking about the school. But in the 80s, like the schools here in Italy were quite in a way respected and severe. So like the first image that I have of my teacher when I was little, it was her behind this huge cathedral, like, and you know, this the table, not like the of the teacher. And she was like, because I am like your second mother. And I was like completely terrified because this girl, this lady was kind of horrible, you know, like it was like very, you know, ugly and she was looking like a witch, like we are in Halloween. But the and she was very helpful with me. I was constantly not paying attention, and she wasn't able to to connect a sympathy with me. So like it was actually I was very traumatized by school. But at one point my mom told me, listen, Daniela, you don't have to go, because at that time you could have stayed at school until just after the mid school. So at 13 years old, no? Like, so, and she told me like, you can finish here and come to make pizza with us, because my parents, they have a pizzeria.
Oh, that's cool.
And I said, no, I want to continue, but in the art school. And they say, okay, but listen, we are not going to help you anymore with the homeworks, okay? So you have to do all yourself. And the first year that you bump, then it's over. You come to the pizzeria to work. And I was so scared to go to pizzeria to work that I went very well, and I became one of the best, you know. I was super competitive, and no, it went very well at one point.
Well, that's interesting. So your parents were more or less pushing you into the family business and out of school. Like they would have been fine with that. Interesting.
Yeah. No, my father is a super, like he feels like, actually both my mother and my father are hyperactive people. They can wake up at 5 and not stop working till 10 p.m. It's like, really, they're very physically and in terms of energy, I have to say that I've met very few people in the world with that energy. So I consider that I was, you know, being in my world constantly comparing with them. They were super active, super, you know, awake. You know, it was quite difficult. But then, you know, I think that their energy inspired me quite a lot. Hmm. So I'm very, very happy and proud of my parents.
Wow. Were they supportive of your art?
Yeah. My father used to paint when he was little. Hmm. And then also a tragic thing happened, now, because when I was 12, my sister, my older sister, died, and she was 19. And she was the one that she wanted to keep carry the family business. She was the one that was more connected to the family. And I was a little bit yeah, she's doing art. But and so it was quite of a big tragedy for us. Mm. And but then at that point I became the only child, and they tried to give me as much as they could.
Mm. Are your parents still living?
Yeah.
And work doing pizza still?
They retired finally, but they keep making food, and every time that they come to my house, they bring bands.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. That's great. It's great for my belly.
That's awesome. So what did you, so you said you were good at art as a child, but did you love it as a child? Was it something you loved doing, or was it just something you had facility for?
No, I definitely love doing it, because at the end there was also the fact that I wanted to prove to the people around me that I was also good now in something. So I think that it's hard to say where the pleasure ended, and actually the fact that I wanted to have some appreciation also now from the people around me came into place, but. So like a little bit of both, of course. I think that when you have a facility, but in that moment it was a facility, but at the end when I actually exposed myself to the art school and to other people, I wasn't the best. I was good, one of the best, but I wasn't the best. And I'm, you know, so of course you always have someone else that is better than you.
Tell me about that. Like in New York, there are arts high schools. Is that basically what you went to? Like you kind of get a bit of an education through elementary school and then the middle years. And then was it that you switched focus to a whole new school just with art students, but they were like in their teenage years? Was that what it was like?
Yeah. Like consider in Italy, we have, history of art, geometry, since the elementary school, basically.
Since elementary.
Yeah, like, exactly. Like art history, not, but art, yes. Hmm. So art history, it begins in middle school.
Okay.
So like, and then geometry, like I think geometry is one of, you know, is very important, you know, learning since when you're little to get, you know, to sort it out, how to draw a cube in perspective, or just like this kind of three-dimensional world with solids, I think is very important and useful. And the high school is the first 2 years of the high school, all the high schools have the same amount of hours of math, of science, of literature, these kind of things. And then the extra hours are with the model, with the sculpture, doing things like that. And I wasn't, you know, the luckiest, because I was doing my high school in Grosseto, which is not a big city. But I had great teachers. But like in Florence, for example, they have much more choices. They can do they can do like etching, they can do, they can sew, they can, you know, they can do the jewelry. So there is much more choices in Florence. They can do pottery. But in Grosseto, where I was, like, there was just painting and sculpting and architecture.
Okay.
And after 2 years, I did architecture, actually. I did, like, so I spent all my high school. I did, of course, sculpture and painting, but I was more focused on the architecture. Wow. And not because I wanted to become an architect, but just because I... the teachers in that session, they were much more, much stronger. They were asking much more from the students. And so I was very competitive and I wanted to be challenged. So that's why.
Yeah. And to that point, you were saying that you sort of went to this school and realized that there were other people who were working at possibly a higher level than you. And that's such a formative experience for artists. Did you find that ultimately motivating or despairing when you realized that?
Well, that I think is a personal thing, right? Like, yeah. you can take the things in both ways. And as a character, I'm the one that I enjoy challenges. So like when I do too well one thing, I quit. And I do start something that I don't know so that I can make more mistakes and keep the challenge going. My husband keep teasing me, Daniela, but why are you changing the technique every time that you do a new painting? Keep the same method, no? Why are you changing it? And I say, yeah, you're right. But, you know, it's not fun enough if I keep doing the same thing over and over and over.
I totally agree, though. I think in terms of just educating yourself, like, it really turns into that. Once you're at a school, you have to, it's up to you how much you're going to grow. And I do not think repeating the same process over and over again leads to much growth. I think that even doing something that's unrelated will make you stronger at whatever you're going for. I mean, I know there was some sayings, you know, a lot of old, like, Buddhist sayings, things about a well-rounded individual and how much stronger you'll be at any activity you're doing, like kind of learning to get into a flow of something. And I noticed that if people just keep doing the same process over and over again, they really atrophy, you know?
Yeah. I mean, probably, I think if you really want to get good at something, probably you have to become an expert of that. There is people that enjoys like the, you know, the getting more pure and pure in the process, not becoming, I don't know how to say that, but like becoming, yeah, so such an expert that every passage, every movement, it becomes such a perfect ritual, you know, of the thing. And so I admire those people because definitely I'm not like that. And so like I really do admire people that can repeat the same movement and still find excitement in this. And my parents did the same. They spent their entire life repeating the same movements over and over. But they were still finding exciting what they were doing. They were still inventing new recipes, new things, and they were very enthusiastic about it. So I think it depends by each person. Someone can actually get benefit from doing the same thing in the same way, and some other people, no, it depends by the temperament that I feel. My temperament, I can get bored quite quickly.
But you also probably do it enough times to get good, and then you get bored, right? So I feel like we get better by doing things over and over and over again. Basically, in order to keep things exciting, we need to break routine. I feel like in order to achieve mastery, we need to keep routine for as long as we can. So you probably, like, in that cycle for you, might be faster than it is for me. Like, I feel like I can do things for, like, I'm drawing the same kind of trees. Like, I'm searching out these big trees and it's the same type of tree. And each one of them feels, you know, special to me and feels kind of like it's this portrait. But on the other hand, I'm doing the same thing over and over again. And at some point that series will sort of like run itself out. But it seems like, so for me, that cycle is a year or 2 years or 3 years. For you, that cycle might be like a few months or a few years.
I don't know. Anyway, like the thing is the when I actually enter in the Florence Academy, the fact that they were taking extremely seriously the slowness of the process and actually taking your time. And I was like, I want to do it. Like, it was really trying to be fast now in the process. And they were like, you know, slowing me down. And I think that it was a huge struggle. I was crying basically every day, but I think it really helped me a lot.
But I think maybe what we're talking about is the difference between process and technique. Like, there's a slow technique that sounds like it was really good for you at the time to change sort of what your method of fast, you know, nothing beats a reaction to something. But I think that's like technique, that's sort of steps to go through in a pace that's very different from process, where you're constantly evolving in your studio and adding things in and taking things out. Like, that's the flow I'm thinking about a little more. Like, product coming from your specific process is a lot more interesting than rote steps, I think.
Wait, so how did you decide on the Florence Academy of Art?
It was a lucky situation. My first apartment, it was in Florence. It was right next to Charles Cecil studio in San Frediano. And so I bumped into that studio and I was like interested in what they were doing, because at that time there was no internet, and I was kind of looking for a serious place to study. At that time I was studying comics at the Comics International School, and I was studying illustration. And I was doing well, but I was feeling that my capacity of drawing wasn't improving. And so I was looking for, you know, a place that could have teach me how to draw better, because the Italian Academy is more oriented towards the contemporary. And so they don't teach you so much how to draw, but they didn't teach you the technique, you know. They teach you more like how to explore, how do you start your artistic how you to find your artistic voice. And I wasn't interested at the time in that, because I was coming from a very practical family, so I wanted to find a job with what I was able to do. So illustration seems at the time a good compromise, but then I wasn't feeling, you know, good in it, especially for the commission. And so I was looking for a school that could teach me how to improve my skills, and so I enrolled in the Florence Academy by confronting, at that time, Charles Cess and Daniel Gavis were already divided, and I confronted a little bit the two schools. And I decided for the Florence Academy because, first of all, like, there was Simona Dolci, which was Italian, and at the time I wasn't speaking any English. And so, like, I decided to go there because there was her, that she was a teacher. But also because there was more, like, the community was a little bit less bohemian, let's say. I wanted to have something more severe, more serious as a school. And I thought that the Florence Academy, it was quite unique it is quite unique still, because if it always feels when you get in to get into a church, you know, like this sort of temple where people really respect, you know, the moment, the time that they dedicate to drawing, to studying. And so something like that is completely missing in Italy, where the art schools are very sometimes enthusiastic, full of nice people, but is you know, like it's completely different atmosphere. So I was looking for something like that, and that's why I enrolled at one point at the Florence Academy, and I stayed at the Florence Academy for 21 years after that.
Wow.
So you said in the that in the beginning you were crying daily. What caused this?
Oh yeah, because it's true what you guys saying, the difference between technique and process is two different things. But it's also true that your temperament has to face with both of them. So like if you are a pretty impulsive person, what you will come up with in techniques or in the actual process of your creation, I think will be dictated by that. And if you left alone in what you do, you will never discover the other side, no, of yourself. So like the fact that I was so full of energy, trying to go fast, being in a place that made me calm down, made me canalize my energy better, it helped me a lot because it made me improve much more. So like, since like that's what I was looking for, I was looking for a growth in all senses. I think that through that technique, I've been able to learn how to, in a way, meditate, no, on what I was doing, not just technically, but also, you know. So I hope that it was clear. Was I clear?
So okay. So you study there, and then after that, did you stay on to teach?
Yeah, after this, I think the second year I was a student there, they proposed me to become an assistant right away. I wasn't even able, and this is the beauty of American schools or like private schools, where like there is this fast way of, you know, regenerating the teacher class. In Italy, if you want to become a teacher, you have to do 360 exams on psychology, rights, and everything, you know. Instead, the private system, it allows people to refresh the blood much faster. Anyway, so I wasn't really speaking that well English, but I was able to say just a few things, and I started to teach. And I stayed there so I started to teach in 2003. I became director of the intermediate program in 2013. And then I left, this year.
So having that much experience, this is a question that comes up all the time, just in general in art. And this is more rhetorical for you, just to, can art be taught? What are your opinions on that?
No, say it again.
can art be taught? Can you teach someone art?
Okay, wait. You can teach someone a technique, and doesn't matter what kind of technique. It could be also make potteries, like, you know, it can be any technique like that you can have in the world. Sometimes just trying to go towards a perfectionating ourselves, you know, perfectionating the technique, you grow as a person, because you constantly facing your demon, You're constantly facing your temperament. So when I was giving, for example, when I was teaching, most of the time I had to tutoring the students because they, some of them, they didn't believe in themselves enough. And so they didn't have the courage to even try. And some others instead, they were like trying too much. So like it is always very connected to the psychology of the person, not of the students that you have in front. But the thing is like you use the school as a base, not as a soil, in order to grow away from it. Mm. Okay. So you start with a base and then you grow away. So that means that you actually start to get confident so that you can actually get away from it, away from that technique, because you have to get your own technique. Mm-hmm. So that is teaching technique, which is possible. Teaching art is a different thing, okay? Because in order to become an artist, I think you need to learn a little bit yourself, you know, like understand yourself better and understand when sometimes you can get, if you start to preconfectionate all your thoughts too much, no? So like when you, I think that sometimes people that comes from an education, like the that is strictly technical, they might actually become very good with the skills, but they are lacking of imagination. Okay, because the more you are studying, you know, the technical stuff, the more you connected to the steps, and the more you like to become good at it. And so you become more and more Puritan in the passages, in the materials that you use, in the transitions that you want to make. And slightly at one point, you don't realize that the things that you care about the aesthetic of that little transition or the colors, or the pigments that you use, they are just for you, but they're not really communicating probably that much also to the others. And so that's why I think that you get a little bit away from who you are, because you get into that sort of academic idea. So like, I think the academies in general, all of them, all the traditional academies, or all the schools that are teaching the technique academically, they prepare you to be a, you know, someone that with good skill, but they don't prepare you to become an artist. And this is a big statement. Now, I think that you, to be an artist, you have to make your, there is a journey that you have to make. There's a very personal journey and you have to try to explore it. So as much as you study the technique, you also have to, you know, follow that sort of journey that is more artistic. That means trying kind of to go deeper in what you like, try to understand better through your imagination and through who you are really, because I think that daily life is a constant attempt to who you are. You know, you're constantly exposed by what is considered good, what is considered cool, you constantly have, not just because nowadays we have social media that constantly shows us who has more followers or other things. No, but even in our daily, like just in a class, now you constantly see someone and you say, yeah, that guy have done something cool. I want to repeat that thing, no? And in that moment, you are getting away from who you are, I think. And, but this is just my opinion, of course. I mean, I'm a little stupid Italian.
Daniel, we want your opinion. We want you here specifically because you have opinions.
No, and I'm listening and I can't agree more with you on this. Like, I feel like I have arguments around these topics all the time. And I really appreciate what you're saying. Like, to me, it feels 100% right. And it is a little bit of process and technique. Like, you can teach technique. That's valuable. But the process is yours and that's up to you to find. And that's where all the beauty is. And I'm constantly surprised at how much schooling and effort put into people and never find themselves. It just feels like, in a way, there's a lot of wasted time there without finding who they are, who they're supposed to be, you know?
Yeah, but is that something that school can teach? Or is it kind of the, you know, like your job as, you know, if you want to be an artist, right, you go to school to learn the technique. And then whose job is it to make you an artist? Is it your job or is it the school's job?
I have an answer to this. You know, the origin of the word education. The origin of the word education, it means educere. From Latin, it means to take out from students. So the knowledge is already inside you. So the teacher should supposed to be the one that is able to take out that knowledge from you, because inside of you, you already have it. So the technique is something that you can teach someone to see, you know, the world differently, simply, in order to put it into a canvas, a drawing it. Okay, if that is what you want to do, you ought to choose the soil where you're going to put your roots. And this soil will never be perfect, because there is not a world, a place in the world that can have everything, okay? So you have to make a decision. If at the moment that you decide to go to academy that teaches the 19th century style, that is your soil. That you is from there that you're gonna grow out from it. So you decided that, and that is already part of your personality in a way. But the teacher supposed to have the time to listen to you and to not impose an aesthetic to you, but supposed to ask questions, because the question is actually the key of the teaching. Academia, I will never stop to repeat these. Also the word academy, it comes from a garden where the philosopher used to walk and ask questions to themselves. Academo was a warrior in Greece, and this park was dedicated to this guy. And the philosopher that began like the academy in the school, the first academy of the world, they were just asking questions to each other. So I think that the world began in this way. What do you think? And the guy was like, I think this other thing. Interesting. And what do you guys think? And everyone was asking questions. And through that, so this is called the maieutic way of teaching. And unfortunately, it's very rare to find a school that through the maieutic way, it is able to teach you the knowledge that you need to know, that basically comes from inside of you. So that doesn't mean that, you know, I think that the world is flat and I will be convinced about that and that's it. No, of course not. But it means that maybe there is an alternative way that our school can explore. And I think it will never take away actually will not take away power from teaching, you know, something, because teaching, it doesn't mean I impose my vision on you. Teaching, it means I listen to you. Okay, you are this person, you like to do these things. Why? And make the students to write why he likes that thing, for example. Or, okay, good, but you don't have to judge, you know? And unfortunately, we are human beings. We are not perfect. We are not gods. And so sometimes someone comes and you don't like something, like a lot of, for example, my friend Roberto Ferri, when he was at the academy, he was constantly attacked by the people that because he was doing figurative art. And if I would have said I decide to use a color that is not traditional or a canvas that is synthetic in the Florence Academy, I would be burned into the piazza. No, I'm not kidding. That this is too much. But I'll be a little bit considered heretical, you know? So.
So are you saying that, you know, kind of one of the flaws of the academies is that it tends to get, as it gets more specialized, it gets more dogmatic?
I would say so.
Is that why you ended up leaving?
Yes. Yes, exactly, because I loved teaching and especially because of this relation. And I know that I wasn't well prepared to be so maieutic in asking so many questions, but I was really sensitive. At least I was feeling a lot of love for my students, and I think that felt. Anyway, the thing is a little bit that I think that is the human contact that is missing nowadays, because everything is going, especially in those schools, going quite fast. After COVID, it became a little bit too heavy, and I wasn't able to be also secure of my ability in giving the right, you know, support to the students, because I wasn't convinced anymore that kind of school was the right thing, for example. No, so I was ready to leave and actually start a new journey, because at the moment that I left the Florence Academy, I realized that I had to start from zero again, completely. Like my all the things that I used to do before, like painting a portrait in natural light, or painting a portrait outside, or like painting a still life. All this doesn't give me any satisfaction anymore. Like I'm completely, it's like, it doesn't give me, like right now, if I get into an environment that is too academic, I actually have problem breathing. You're kidding, but it's like this. So that's why I decided to start this new kind of this course that has a lot of people coming from different environment, and there are some students that do illustration, others that do very abstract things, and others that do very material oriented stuff, and all this environment that is very not judgmental. No one is judging if someone is doing figurative or if he's doing more contemporary things. No. So I'm very happy that it's like that, and I'm having really good time with these kids, that they're all younger than me, but it's okay. And I realized that they are much more into the artistic kind of research more than the technical research. So,
well,
it's nice to be in an environment that is different.
It's so nice to hear you talk like this. I think you've made such wonderful moves, like, you know, kind of being in that environment, getting what it needed and being sensitive to know when you've reached the end and kind of move on. Because I know a lot of those spaces can almost be like cult-like, like there's a lot of limiting, like everything outside of these walls is bad and we're doing the right thing here. And that could be very hard to leave that sort of small world, you know, where it's all of a sudden, absolutely, you realize, yeah, there's a big world out there.
There was, Vincent Desiderio, it was, he did something that I was thinking to do for a long time. And it was the workshop that will teach you to delete the workshop. I don't remember now the title, how it was, but it was basically the workshop against the workshops. And I think the idea was exactly that, is the fact that after you had so much training, sometimes you just need to expand with curiosity, expand a little bit the panorama and try to actually look into the books that have different styles, medieval images, or go to the archaeological museum. Try to expose yourself to more things, no? And I think that it is the best thing that you could have do after years and years of 19th century artists. Because, like, you can really rediscover a new imaginary. And I think that with that not judgmental curiosity, you can also look inside your inner wheel of imaginary, you know, like you can actually start to look images into your unconscious mind, you know, and you can actually exercise like these active imagination, dreams, you know, and everything becomes possible at one point. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing for after many years that you be without the studio with the north light at 45 degrees, you cannot paint. And if the model, it doesn't stand in that position, it's going to be a problem. You know, like after many years of those limitations for me, just painting with artificial light and whenever I want is such a liberation. I feel.
Yes.
Ah.
Making your work, becoming who you are rather than just plumb line after plumb line. You know, there's something good about that, but it's like,
see,
ultimately you can learn that and move on. And I'm always nervous about so many people that I meet because, you know, I've been teaching for years too and went to schools like you did. And it's like, they don't break out. They quit. They do all this stuff because it was somewhat misery for them, you know?
You know, guys, I think I went to, I guess, you know, a non-art school for undergraduate. Like they had an art department, but it was very...
You have the other side.
Yeah, it was like an art department that was simultaneously very underfunded. And then some of the people there were, you know, they were very dogmatic the other way. Like they got hired in the 50s when they were just breaking rules and, I don't know, dragging. There's one guy who's, I think he was famous for actually, you know, well, getting women to strip naked and then dragging their bodies around on a canvas. And that was like his claim to fame. The chair of the painting department there had this very, maybe just that year, maybe she changed her mind later, but she would start off just saying, you know, painting is dead. And she especially thought that figurative painting was dead. And so I always romanticized this day. So it was the days pre-internet. Someone told me about the Florence Academy of Art. And to me, I was 21, 22. It just seemed like it'd be this magical place where maybe at that point, it felt like someone could make me into an artist just by having the right plumb lines and showing me where the right light is. And then I didn't get into the Florence Academy of Art. So I would have actually probably been there around when you started teaching. So I would have been one of your students.
Well, you know, like I know that dogmas are not just on one side. Dogmas are especially on also the other side. So as I said before, I decided to not go to the academy in Florence, the actual Florentine Academy, because I knew that they wouldn't have teach me how to draw. They would have teach me just like more theoretical things. And I would have become anyway a figurative artist, because one thing that made me also, change a little bit the opinion, and I think it probably has been a very crucial moment of my passage, is when, 9 years ago, I met for the first time the team, the Roberto Ferri and some of the artists in the area of Rome. And Roberto Ferri is a very incredible artist, for my opinion. The figures that he has, like the composition, I think that is very impressive, very flashy. And he has never had anybody that taught him how to do that. He was in Rome, so he was able to go to see Caravaggio and some other painters of the Baroque time, and he started to copy them, and that's how he learned how to paint. So he taught himself, and I think that a lot of other people in the area of Rome got inspired by that, and they actually doing it even without, you know. Yeah. Also, there is this other guy, there is Gasparro. I don't know if you guys know, you know the guy. Like, he's extremely talented, and he never really had like a traditional, he didn't went to the Florence Academy, but he's pretty good in his figurative art. There is plenty of people that haven't done academies like that, and they're still good. I mean, I just want to say Florence Academy is one of the best schools in the world, for sure. Okay, no problems. I would say that. But if your destiny is to, if you really want to become a figurative artist, you can also do it if you really care. You can study it. If you really care about figures, you can do it, you know? So even without having a training, that's what that maybe for us it's easier because we are in Italy and we are surrounded by paintings. But in Italy, for example, you cannot go into a museum and copy it. You just have to observe, then go home and try to copy. It's not allowed. That's what I think. So for me, it was a special moment, and I have to tell you that there was also another artist that he was part of the company, let's say of the group there in Rome, Adriano Fida, that unfortunately just died. He was pretty young, and it was like a very extreme, very Italian, but they were like the discussion, the themes about technique, materials. It's pretty much the same of the Florence Academy, even if there are two different worlds, you know, they haven't really met. And I was actually really surprised that many things in the process of how to build up a figure, it was actually similar. So,
You know, so there's all these, like, I know that, you know, the Florence Academy of Art, at some point there was like a schism where someone went one way, someone went another way. And then, you know, whenever I, you know, like Marshall teaches a lot, I sort of bounce around working between various art schools too. And so you hear people either discussing the, you know, the other institution, talking about the instructors sometimes, but also they're very committed to their method. And, you know, and kind of believing what they're doing is right. But just because I think, like, you know, I've heard enough of these discussions from enough different places that, where it feels like each of these is this incredibly special, beautiful bubble. But if you look at that bubble from, you know, like a few feet away, you know, like a few bubbles over, like there's, you know, there's a Grand Central Atelier and their technique, and there's the Florence Academy of Art and their technique, and there's some similarities, but some really crucial differences. But then if you go and talk to people at, like, you know, just in outside of the figurative art world, to them, it all looks the same. Like to them, it's, you know, they can't tell the difference between like GCA, exactly, or Boston Realist Art or Toronto Academy or whatever. To them, it's just all a bunch of, you know, academic artists. And kind of like, I think I'm, you know, we're probably less into it in the abstract world, but to me, a lot of that stuff looks the same. Like a lot of the kind of abstract or minimalist Chelsea art looks the same. But I think if you're in that world, there's crucial differences and there's kind of its own dogma and its own, you know, gurus that people worship. I just don't know who they are.
Yeah, no, like the vocabulary is completely different. I remember when me and Gaia Grazioli, we were trying to organize the Corpo a Corpo exhibition at the Villa Bardini. We had a moment where we met with this huge collectionist in Milan, and he has all the latest stars of the contemporary world in his collection. And he also pretty good because he helps the Accademia of Brera in bringing up some new students to the Society of Collectors. So he's actually a very active person. But when we were showing to him the quality of the work that we were presenting coming from people, you know, around the world, like the Academy in New York or the Academy in the Florence or in other places in the world, like Spain, Greece, China, Russia, the guy said, for me, this is all the same. Like, he couldn't see the difference. And he said, you know what? I don't care, because he doesn't care. He wasn't caring about the quality. No, like the quality is something that that is strictly, I think, is like there is interest for the quality for us that we are into the world of art, or, you know, or like we like the technique and we paint. And so people that paint can appreciate the quality, but most of the other people, they just like look at the message that the painting.
Yeah, and that's, I think, kind of being the resident bubble hopper here. I teach at so many different places, and there's so many, everybody's doing great things and trying their best, and they all think they're doing it the right way and everything. It's like, it is so nice to just have a bird's eye view and see like that. It's all like kind of like the beginning of this. What's the difference between technique and process? Like, if you find yourself, if you find your process, it doesn't matter what school you went to, how you did it, you can make beautiful things within you. And if you trust too much in some institution giving you the secret keys to the kingdom, it's just not going to work because it's not found inside of you. You have to, that comes from inside, and very few people do discover that, you know, in any way you slice it.
Yeah. I recently ended up at a party in a totally different bubble from, like, not figurative art, not abstract art. It was just a bunch of kind of like finance, you know, like finance people. And they started talking about art, and it was it was an entirely different conversation than what any of us would have, like not about technique, not about concept, but they were actually talking about it as an investment and what would make the best investment. And I mean, it felt like some people liked what they were buying and some people were doing it as a strategic move, but it was you know, like from that bubble, I think they think of all artists as one thing. Like to them, it doesn't matter whether we're Academy or Yale program that, you know, just whips out these people that, you know, immediately end up in Chelsea galleries. They're just thinking about it in terms of like, is this a good place to store cash? And that was kind of an interesting thing.
Of course. Now, after who told me that after drugs, art is actually the best way to clean the money?
That's hilarious.
Anyway, like it's true. Like completely different topics. I think the people that talks about like concept art, like they just ask completely different questions. And in a way, I think that the also, who say that? No, like if you, I think it was Steve Jobs that said, like, if you had all the little experience that you've done in your life, then maybe at one point you will see where all these experience will bring you up to. And I think everyone shouldn't, you know, judge itself too hardly. If you, in a moment of your life, you need the Florence Academy, okay, get the Florence Academy or get an education like that. If you feel like you need, something else, then try, you know, if you need to study another thing, try. If you need to just like do a like a research inside of you and try to really focus on or take your time to just read books and write down things that comes out you, then do it, you know. Like I think everyone's supposed to feel free enough mentally to say that if you do it or you don't do it, you can always arrive everywhere you like. It's the fact that you need something, it doesn't mean that without that something you will not become,
yes,
the artist or whatever. Like I'm just saying, I just hope that people don't think that if they cannot afford, and as an Italian, I've been very lucky to afford the Florence Academy, but if you cannot afford it, you can still learn how to do it. You just have all masters to look up to. If you are in nature, and if you want, one day you will be, you know, every day you will be wrong, but at one point you will be right. You just have to persevere, yep. You know? So like, I think the best, the formula doesn't exist, and students are always looking for formulas. Formulas doesn't exist. It exists just you as a unique person with your unique history, and you just have to do whatever it feels the right thing to do at the moment. But don't say to you the lie. Don't allow your brain to say that if you haven't done that thing, you will not be able to do it consequentially. Just like, you know, I would like to say that, to encourage people to just keep bring out what you have inside of you and not what, you know, someone else expect you to be, because otherwise you're not artist enough. Because people in the past, most of the artists that we consider great, many of them, they didn't have such a huge celebration. Caravaggio became famous, became famous a little bit, but it wasn't really well considered at his time. And many of the other artists, they weren't really famous. So like, it's important to divide these two things. Being famous and a good investment is different from being an artist. An artist, you can be an artist in the middle of nowhere that nobody sees your work. That's what I think. You just like how you live your life. How is the spirit and the energy in the way that you do things that makes you an artist? If you have the curiosity, if you have the enthusiasm, if you allow yourself to be captured deeply by the things, and also to be able to risk, not to risk, because every time you expose yourself, but you're the true self and not the self that someone else wants from you, but your true self that can be judged and can be pointed out. So like every time you have the courage to expose yourself, despite what other people think, That means to be an artist. It means like to keep going on your way without thinking about anything else. That's for me what it is. But as I said, I'm good with opinions.
So what is your life like right now? Like for a long time, your life was, you know, the Florence Academy of Art, teaching paintings, those kinds of paintings. And it seems like you've just sort of stepped off that path entirely. So you're etching, but what else is going on?
I don't know, like that, another thing that I think is important to, like my life is beyond and, you know, just the, you know, the painting. I don't want to identify myself just with what I do, like what I paint and or as a teacher. I mean, the teaching, it was a part of my life. Then on the side, I always have, you know, a family, I have, you know, friends, I have my garden, my nature. So like my dogs and like my life is more, no? Like I don't want to identify myself. Of course it's an artistic podcast. So I will not tell you about my personal shit, but it's okay. So like my life now is much more relaxed. I have to say, first of all, because by not teaching so much anymore, not teaching anymore, like, because if I do, I will do some workshop in the spring, but will not teach constantly like I used to do. I definitely am more relaxed and I have more time for studying. So I study a lot, I read a lot, and I'm actually doing it's already more than 1 year that I'm actually doing this the writing of my dreams, like, so I'm doing like a Jungian how would you say percorso, like a Jungian journey that will hopefully bring me to something, but like this is the where I actually take my images from. So like I'm basically trying to get in love, getting more into my unconscious side and more than the conscious. So I'm actually studying and getting stronger in order to be able to go deeper into that part of myself. When I was a student, like one of the things about narrative paintings that I was really involved and into it, it was about like try to kind of find a theme and then try to, from the theme to kind of bring out like an image. And I was very disappointed about that process because every time that someone would have told me, we are going to do a show on blah, 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 I was thinking, blah, 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 wow. Like, and now, and all these stereotypes of the image of blah, 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 it was kind of actually getting into my head. And I was unable totally to get out of it. And I thought, what a course. This is actually pretty bad. I'm actually lacking of imagination in it. For all my life, I've been such a, you know, crazy girl, like always with the mind up in the air. And now I'm not able to come up with something more original than what my preconception about that thing. And so I realized that my way of thinking or approaching to narrative, it was very illustrative kind of oriented. And so like you have a test and then you try to come up with an illustration from it.
So you mean narrative painting like they were doing in the Paris salons or whatever, like taking a myth and painting something like that. Okay.
Exactly. Exactly. So I didn't like that at all. Exactly. Like also, for example, even like the composition of a still life, you know, like everyone was telling me, no, you don't have a theme. So if you're painting through it, you just have to paint through it. If you're painting, like, wait a second. Like, this thing, it doesn't make sense. Or it makes sense, but it's just a little bit sterile. So unconsciously, in a way, I say that, you know, forget about, I would not think about that, and I would just go abstract. And that at the time, of course, the Florence Academy teaches a lot about abstract shapes and how to compose with abstract shapes. But I think that it was a very, very important and fundamental moment, because, like, when you realize that actually through the perception of the abstract shapes, you can give an emotion, then you realize how powerful is the base, more than the thing that you actually telling. Yeah. And I realized that going from the abstract to the actual theme, it would have been, for me, the more natural way to avoid the preconception. So in this case, I think that it was Jung, but also together afterwards, many others that studied the psychology of the perception. You can easily find also yourself through exercises of projection. I don't know if you guys know about that, but for example, if you take a paper, if you divide it into six sections, and you, in one little square you have a point, in another a little thing, another, like, different segments, you copy these pages and you give it to a class and say to the kids, for example, complete the drawings, everyone will draw something different with it. No, you just, the point in the little square, it gives just the beginning of the imagination, no? And I think that this is the right path to also discover yourself through these exercises. They can be, projective exercise in drawing, but they could be also through stories. And so maybe I start with a sentence and you have to describe what you do see. And through, like, the description of what you see, I did a workshop. I invited some students once, and I asked them to just pick an object and to write down a story out of it. And it's amazing how personal those things comes out. You know, like, when you actually force yourself a little bit to write, to, again, to use the imagination. No? And so I think that it's a wonderful tool, and thanks to the studies that I'm doing, I just want to go more and more deeper into this idea of allowing the unconscious to guide my decision on everything. So I just want to eliminate the conscious social control, social rules parts that tells me you don't have to do this or that. At least I'm trying.
So is this like, because you keep mentioning Jung, is this like dream journal stuff? Like, you are doing dream analysis, like taking whatever that was and whatever dream you had last night and trying to think about it with Jungian archetypes and make something very personal out of it. Is that what you're doing?
That is one thing. That is one part of the thing. So, like, I'm trying to put into drawings what I do see while I'm dreaming. So, like, of course I have a journal, and of course, but it is also actively through, like, just observing, a surface that is that has some texture, just through that, like just the vision that comes out, for me can be extremely interesting to study. And so like I'm analyzing what I do see. And of course that is personal, but since it's personal, it also means that it's more valuable for me to use it in my painting. So I'm not like at this point, the activity of my paintings is not for someone else. Mm. You know, mm. It's strictly for me.
So I want to ask you a question then. It's been a nice kind of week getting ready for this, just getting to look at your work, because lately I feel like you've been doing some really exquisite things, like and I'm thinking about that multi-figure painting. It's got kind of like a Joseph Wright light in the middle and these figures kind of around it. If I had never met you, we say we meet at a bar and I say, what do you do? And you're like, I'm a painter. And I ask you to describe that painting to me. How would you describe it?
In words?
In words, yeah.
It's probably a trick question.
It's an impossible question.
Okay, well then let's dial that back. How would you describe your work if you're like, I'm a painter, and I say, what are your paintings about? What are your paintings like? You'll have to answer that at some point at a bar. What do you say?
Words are so, like, such a label, you know, like I'm very bad in two things: pricing my work and describing my work, my works, because I can't, like, it's are two things that I'm really bad at, like, really. Hmm. I cannot do it. The only thing I can do it, I can show it to you. I can take my phone and show it to you my work. That is what I would do. But for sure, like lately since I've been into this journey of active imagination and dreamy, I would say that the themes of my latest work are more onirical. Is it a word in English?
Lyrical. Yeah. Like a rhythm, like a
thanks, movie. Latin.
Lyrical is a word.
Onirical, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Sì. Sì. In Italian is onirico. Onirico, onirical.
Onirical. Okay, you know, that's not the word I was thinking. All right, maybe.
You see? To Google. Google, traduci onirico in inglese. Onirico in inglese.
You know, that should be the little like clip in front of the podcast.
Dreamlike. But onirico is dreamlike.
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 It's quite cheap as a word, this one, because onirico is a more poetic. Vabbè. Okay, nothing.
But it comes from you, right? It's not you didn't open up the Greek myth book and say, what did Hermes do that day? I'll make a painting of these. Are coming from you. Like okay, so I'm still hung up. And by the way, not being able to answer is an answer either way. You know, there's something interesting about that. But is that painting, is it sad? Do you think?
Is it sad for you?
I mean, it definitely is melancholy, right? Like it definitely has. So it feels
non-color means sad.
Wait, melancholy?
No, you say non-color or melancholic.
Oh, I said melancholy.
Ah, melancholic.
It feels reflective. It feels, I know you don't like podcasts, but one of my favorite podcasts is this one where they just interpret dreams from a Jungian lens. It's three Jungian psychoanalysts. And so the listeners will write in their dreams and they'll interpret them, you know? And I feel like that does, there is a lot of change in that painting and a lot of, I do read some sadness in it.
So. Now, I know that sometimes the reaction can be quite negative to things like that, because for example, in the imaginary, probably in the collective imaginary, like that recalls something like sacrifices or something. And I probably realized that afterwards, because while I was doing it, my mind, it was just like, how can I make this birth of the, this new woman, no? Because the kid is a woman. It is the new baby, it's the new baby girl. How can I make it important, no? And so I thought that they're putting into the center more like a stellar constellation, no? Like in the center with all these other women that are like kind of the hours, right? Like it's like the clock, you know, everything goes around it, and there are 12 because 12 with the baby, you know, 12 is also an important number for women, but in general for the time for us, and I think that in maybe the thing that influenced me on that painting is that I painted it during the COVID time, during the moment where we were closed at home, and I think is this sense of this apocalyptical kind of feeling that we always lately we have, right? And maybe we are not so far from what we've been thinking, but the and I think that's why that painting has that mood that is quite, you know, dense, severe, but I hope that people could actually see also that there is a wish, you know, like a hope, speranza, no, un po' di, that hopefully will be also something positive, because anyway, in the center is there is a birth of a new hour, so who knows, you know. Who knows?
Do you feel like it's partially self-portrait? Like you're also the person being born again?
Maybe, yeah. Why not? It's a good interpretation. Well done. Brava.
It's that conceptual art school I went to. They,
you know. Yeah, something, you see, in way of thinking. Everything is always a self-portrait, no?
You know what? So like, I'm not even sure I said it, you know, seriously, but it does feel like you're sort of, you know, one period of your life has ended, and then you're sort of, you know, then maybe you're kind of like a caterpillar. You go into a cocoon and you emerge as something else. And it feels like you're somewhere in that process, like, you know, like that period of study, I feel like it's almost like a cocoon period where you're figuring out what the next thing you're going to be is.
Yes, I like that interpretation. I love it. Yeah. I hope that is like this, that I can actually put some wings and then fly.
Yeah. I don't know. There's probably other things in metamorphose. Like a butterfly is the most generic one, though. Because most of the people who are listening to this are artists, and actually a lot of them, I think, are, you know, either art school or atelier kind of type. You know, like people who are in the middle of a program right now. What advice do you have? Like, let's say for someone at an academy.
The only thing that I would say to them, keep, work hard, try to face your demon, even if they're going to make you suffer, you know, facing your your struggle while you working, when you're trying to perfect yourself, is a very good thing. So keep don't give up. Don't give up. And then if you can, on your free time, expand your art vocabulary and study also moments in art that are distant from your taste or distant from what you're going to do. Because the more you know, the more you can add, you know, you can make a dense picture if you have more history, if you have learned more and things that are not just the things that you like. So try to expand your knowledge into areas that you wouldn't expect it you might like, you know? So try exactly like I will give the same advice to the people that want to be better people. Try to meet someone that you will never consider, you know, try to talk with someone that you will, you know, not consider, like maybe the old lady in the shop or someone that is not all your of the same class that you are in, you know, someone that is not as hippie as you are or are academic as you are. And maybe you might actually discover something special and deep and strong. So just expand your knowledge. Don't get so narrow-minded, if possible. This is my suggestion.
No, that's great. I mean, honestly, and this is something where I don't know about you, but I feel like in America, this is like what I'm most alarmed about, our lack of ability to talk to people different than ourselves without it devolving into some sort of, you know, shit show. And, you know, we promised we would not touch on politics, but I feel like it's almost like as a culture, we have lost the ability to debate a little bit. And I, you know, in Italy, it might still be present. I feel like there's people talking to each other on the street all the time.
Lately, it's not really like it used to be before. We're becoming political correct too here as well. So like there is a lot of, but the I think that it is important to not lose the human contact, because the more we go ahead and the more are the things that are making us, you know, scared, that scares us. And I think that the only way out is also compassion. It is mostly compassion and learn that maybe, I think it's a good gymnastic if you could put yourself in a position to shake your security sometimes. You know, we all like to be safe and secure, but what if you're wrong? Just ask the question, what if you're wrong? The only thing that you can gain out of that is to become a better person. Hmm.
Including being wrong, actually. Like, you know, there's a what if you're wrong, and then there's when you know for sure you are, and that might make you a better person too. Well,
and the bravery to address it is not easy.
Daniela, thank you so much for talking to us, by the way. I know it's getting a little late on your end. You look just like a Caravaggio painting right now in the dark, though.
And this is great meeting you. Like, what a pleasure. I really enjoyed all your thoughts on your process and how you're creating these new paintings, and then on various ways of art education. I found it very enlightening, so thank you.
Thank you. I love your shirt, by the way, Led Zeppelin. I love Led Zeppelin.
Thanks. Me too.
Thank you. You really, I don't know you so deeply, both of you, but I hope the next time that I come to the States to meet in person, and I can cook for you some lasagna, some pasta, or some pizza, whatever you want.
I would love it.
But yeah, thank you for inviting me.
For sure, when you're in New York, hit me up on Instagram or whatever. I'd love to hang out. So,
grazie.
Right. And when you're in Boston, you can hang out with me. So
Ah, yeah. I own you a dinner.
Perfect.
Grazie.
Bye, Danielle. Thank you. This is
ciao.
Cool.
Ciao.
Bye.
Thank you for listening, and I hope you got some good painting done while we entertain you with our amazing guest. If you like what you're hearing, follow and subscribe to our podcast if you haven't done so yet. And if you're so inclined, rate us whether you love or hate us. We love hearing all the different opinions and appreciate the feedback. You can reach out to us at artgrindpodcast@gmail.com or DM us on IG at artgrindpodcast. You faithful listeners have the power to help us grow. So please spread the word. It's free and you'll feel good about it. So until next time, stay on the grind while we fill your mind.